Blog Talk Radio.
Stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Well, good evening. I would like to welcome you to the Stop Child Abuse Now Talk Radio Show, sponsored by NASCA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. Tonight is Tuesday, April 12th, 2022. This is scan number 2897. My name is Penelope Bennett, and I am from Bellevue, Washington. I'm also an adult survivor of child abuse. On my host team this evening is Annie Margis, a NASCA family member, and also an adult survivor and a co-host of the show, as well as our very special guest, Felicia Johnson from Miami, Florida. She is our survival professional this evening because our topic show tonight is a Q&A call-in discussion with our survivor professional. We use an open mic forum, and I'll explain a little bit more about what that's all about in the show's format in a few minutes. But I wanted to encourage anyone, if you would like to be involved with NASCA and be a part of our show this evening, it is possible. You do not need any prior experience being a panel member or a guest on the show. All you have to do is be curious and willing. And the number to call in is area code 646-595-2118. Again, that's area code 646-595-2118. And that phone number will get you into the show, and my co-host Annie will greet you on our back line and welcome you into the show, and you can then have an opportunity to just join our discussion and ask our survivor professional, Felicia Johnson, any questions that you may have that are relevant to our discussion. In our open mic type of discussion shows, we focus on NASCA's mission, which is, as you know, all about child abuse, trauma prevention, intervention, recovery. And to reread and restate and remind everyone of NASCA's mission, and as you know, we have a single purpose of NASCA, is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. The first goal, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second goal, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, such as these shows, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So I'll give you the number one more time, and we'll restate the number as we go throughout the show. That number is area code 646-595-2118. All are welcome. So I'll talk to you a little bit about how tonight's show is structured. And on these episodes, after you call in, all of our panelists will have your mic open. Even though I will go down the panel as I facilitate the discussion, this is an opportunity for you to join in. That's why the mics are open. We welcome on these evenings a survivor professional. And which is tonight Lucia Johnson, and she will assist in fielding questions from you, our panel members, and lead us in a variety of topics that we suggest and bring up to her. And we are so lucky to have Lucia because her trauma-informed perspective as a survivor professional really helps us guide discussions on the issue of child abuse, trauma, and healthy human sexuality that spring from questions and topics brought to us by our listeners. And sometimes, and since we're all in our own right experts as we are adult survivors of child abuse. So without further ado, Felicia, I just wanted to thank you for being with us this evening. And if you wouldn't mind just giving our listeners some information on your background, both personally and professionally, before we begin the show, sort of like a mini bio, if you will.
Thank you, Penelope. Thank you, Anne. Great to be on tonight. I always love being with you. Just want to thank NASCA for just allowing me the opportunity to be here tonight. So a little about me. It didn't always be like this, but I am a certified trauma recovery specialist, and I help trauma survivors build their life after trauma. At a very young age, I was sexually abused and physically abused by family members that resulted in me to be taken away and placed in the foster care system. And I spent basically my whole childhood growing up in foster care. Once I got into foster care, life became difficult for me because I was dealing with depression, dealing with self-mutilation. I was cutting myself at that time. And I was just dealing with so much because emotionally and mentally what my experience and what my trauma told me was that I wasn't deserving of a family. That's why I got taken away. I wasn't good enough or deserving enough to be loved. And just all these just different beliefs I had because of trauma. And as I got older, in high school, I began looking for love, like, in all the wrong places. So dealing with drugs, in and out of detention centers, in and out of group homes, because it was very hard for me to put my trust in people or even myself. So began looking for love, and I ended up getting married to my high school sweetheart at 16 years old. I thought when I got married that life is going to be grand, life is going to be amazing, and that all the bad things I experienced was just going to go away. Like, this was my time to shine, I believed. But at 16, I realized that everything that I had gone through just kind of just blew up, you can say. And so when it blew up, I realized that a lot of things that I was battling with because of my trauma. So I found myself at 20 years old with two beautiful daughters, and I'm looking down at their face, and I'm like, life has to be better than this. And that's one thing that I always believe. It don't matter if I was homeless, if I was struggling, even I was neglected, abused, I always believed that I was deserving of a better life. Like, I was deserving to live better and to be loved and appreciated and heard. So I just began to get around that space of people when I was in college. And when I realized people would come to me and they would tell me the things that they've gone through, and I was like, hey, you've gone through a trauma. And this really just put my heart on fire, far as begin helping to be an assignment for trauma survivors, because I believe that trauma survivors are so deserving to be loved, to live life after what has tried to destroy them. And that is why I do what I do, because I believe that trauma survivors are amazing people. They deserve every great thing. And so I'm just happy that I'm able to be a voice and to be an advocate and to be a specialist to help trauma survivors live life outside of what has happened to them, and that that doesn't have to define them or make them who they are.
Well, thank you so much for that. An incredible story, and an incredible, you know, your testimony is, especially in terms of your, you know, the work that you do today. We are very, very fortunate to have you as our HR professional, and you clearly turned, you're utilizing, I think this was your term, your post-traumatic wisdom that came from you.
Yes.
Maybe.
Yes.
During one show, to really help so many other survivors, adult survivors of this type of maltreatment. And it's, you know, I know that Annie is also weighed in on this. I was remiss. We also have another panelist, Sylvia, who's on the panel and has joined us this evening. But I know that we have shared that we have learned, right, and grown from our trauma, and that how important it is to, no matter how old you are, to bring it out and speak of it in the hopes that we can share a voice, not only to heal ourselves, but to help others. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to the show this evening, and I just thank you, Felicia, for your guidance and your expertise this evening. So I wanted to actually just unmute Sylvia's mic. And Sylvia, you have joined us on the panel this evening. I didn't know if specifically there was a question or a topic that you wanted to bring up to Felicia, to start a discussion, something on your mind, or if you would like us to kick off the episode.
Thank you for opening up the mic. Is this not Annie? This is the host
this
of the
is
show.
Penelope. Yeah.
Penelope, okay. Glad to meet you, and thank you for coming on and sharing, Felicia Johnson. I think your story is amazing. This is my first time hearing it and reading on it, and actually, my days are mixed up. I thought I was on Monday. And I was reading about the show for Tuesday, and I really wanted to make it on Tuesday. So today is actually Tuesday, and I am here with you, Mrs. Johnson.
Glad to have you, Sylvia. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, there is a question that when did you realize, you know, you was going through, well, they took you out of the home. Is that when you realized that you was experiencing the trauma, or when did you learn, or as you got older, you learned that you was having traumatic experiences, or at a younger age did you realize that something was different?
That is an awesome question, Sylvia. So as I was growing up, I did not know I was going through trauma. It is not until, I believe, I was in college when I realized, like, oh, this is what this is. When I was growing up, and even before I even got taken away, I thought that this was part of life, because there was no way for my childhood brain to distinguish what was happening, or I had no way of knowing what was good or what was bad, because I was so stuck in my environment. So all I knew was just being beat, and I'm not talking about, you know, disciplinary actions by my mother or my stepfather at that time. It was like something would happen, and something would break, and automatically, oh, Felicia, you're the blame. Something's wrong with you. And so I always felt at 7 years old that there was something wrong with me, that I did not have any type of encouragement or anything good to say. Like, I had none. So I always grew up with just, oh, this is, they said it, so it must be true, which when I got an adult, it resulted in me being a people pleaser, giving myself so much for people and giving my last to people when they really didn't appreciate me or care for me. And so when I realized I had gone through trauma, I said, okay, I have a name to it. I'm aware of it. And now it's time for me to begin to work on this healing thing and this healing process. And that right there, I can tell you, that was a whole journey in itself because I didn't know a name to what I had experienced because I dealt with the sexual abuse from my uncle, and he was in the house with us. So that looked at normal for me. Then being told that I was nothing, or I was a demon child or a devil child, that's what was my experience was. And so I had to begin to chip away that wall that they created, my family, my biological family created, to really rediscover who I was. So that was an excellent question, Sylvia. Thank you. I hope that answered your question.
Yes,
you know,
I don't know who. Penelope. I'm going to go ahead. I'll mute up.
Oh no, you're fine. And Felicia asked you the question. If that answered your question, and I believe that you said that it did. But I
yeah, it did. Wondering. But it was bringing up many more questions. But I'll
right.
back up and let you go.
You know, and I think it would. I think it would. And the reason I'm chiming in is, you know, I agree with Felicia. It's such an excellent question about when did you realize, right? When did you realize that you had, you know, trauma in your childhood? And it sounds like a simple question, but it's not. And for me, I did not realize that I was carrying so much trauma. That was unresolved maltreatment. And so this was about 5.5 years ago. I was 46 years old because I thought it was normal. So
wow.
I think part of that realization, it's part of getting to recovery, is realizing that the patterns that you were living in were not normal. And that's realizing that there's something deep down in there that needs to be addressed. I appreciate, you know, Felicia's comment, and so Sylvia, I'd like to encourage you to ask your follow-up questions to Felicia because this is an excellent topic. So if you have follow-up questions,
yes.
Please ask them.
Yes,
oh
please.
Yeah, I have more questions for her because it, even though I never went into foster care, things that was happening in my biological home, and I've been seeking recovery all my life, but I just never knew what the problem was until age of 59. So I'm glad I found in my own search that I found NASCA and everything that what it offers. I wanted to ask her that. Okay, you said at the age of 7, right, when your uncle that was in the household with you, which sibling was, this is your mom's brother?
My mother, yes.
This is your mom's brother. Okay.
Yes.
So when you got moved away from the home, was there any – you said you stayed in foster care. There was no type of reunification for the biological family. And were they ever getting any kind of assistance for healing?
Oh, wow. Great question. When I got taken away, I believed it. What was told to me when I was taken away from foster care was that I destroyed lives. This is what my mother told me. She told me that I destroyed her life. I did not get reunified with my mother until I had gotten married at 16, and I needed her. The craziest this is, I needed her signature to be underage to get married. There was no fighting for Felicia, for our healing for my family. I believe my biological family is still hurting, broken, and honestly, I believe my mother has actually been abused. I believe she suffers from her own trauma. I believe she has, this is how I knew I was healing, because if you had asked me this 10 years ago, I would have like, bump that lady. But I honestly can say that she has her own personal pain that she has gone through that she has never dared or had the strength to share with anyone. So far as my biological family, I know that they suffer from their own trauma, and they think, like we all have thought, that that's normal. I love what you said, Penelope. You're like, I thought it was normal. And most time as survivors, we don't think that we're going through any adversities or hardship because we believe that it's normal. And so that's pretty much the story for my family, is they don't see the generational dysfunction. And I see it clear as day because, one, I specialize in it. Two, I experience. And three, like, I know what it looks like. So with my family, I think that is really where they have to do their own inner work and their own inner healing for themselves, because to see the dysfunction, you have to either acknowledge it and be aware of it. So thank you, Sylvia.
You're welcome. I want to go back to when you said you got married at 16, because this is one of my questions that I was writing down, and you did explain it, that you had to go, because I was going to ask, you know, were you emancipated, but I see that you wasn't, because you had to get your mother's signature on this.
Before I got married. After I was married, I was officially emancipated.
Right, I understand that, but I was talking about before you got married, but you answered that because you said you had to get your mother's signature on it.
Right.
But I still want to reflect back to that, because you were still in foster care at that time, right?
Absolutely.
Or you were back at home with your mom?
Nope, I was in foster care.
So you had to seek her out,
mm-hmm.
or were you able to find her easily to get this signature for your marriage? And is that who you're married to now still?
No, I'm not.
Okay, so you're in a new marriage. Okay, so let me back
Absolutely.
Up. But let's talk about the, prior before the marriage, because there were things going on that, do you remember at any age that you didn't know you was going through trauma, but you were going through trauma.
Right.
Did you start going to the juvenile? Were you in the juvenile homes, and where did you start going there between 7 and 16?
Alrighty.
Or that started after?
Awesome. So I'm about to break this down, because there's like sections and age groups. So when I was taken away in foster care, I was growing up in and out of different foster homes, because a lot of times, especially back then, a lot of foster parents were not equipped to deal with foster children that had severe trauma. So there's like actually categories of foster care. Like there is, you know, where someone goes out of town, then they only are there for less than 24 hours. Then you have foster care for disabled. And then the foster care category that I was in what we call the therapeutic. And that's when youth or children have gone through some type of trauma or some type of adversity where they had a loss of parent, a loss of guardian. Dealing with abuse, neglect, things of that nature. So even though they were foster parents, a lot of foster parents were not equipped to handle the depression or the self-harm or the acting out, because something would trigger a child, but that child is not able to explain, especially for me. I was not able to explain or name it to say, hey, this is how I'm feeling right now. This is what I'm going through right now. I need help. I had no way because I was how I grew up. So even though I was going through foster care, a lot of parents would say, hey, I can't handle this child. I can't have her in my house. So I would be with one foster parent, and then I end up the next day early in the morning, maybe 6 o'clock in the morning, with my bags packed in front of the what we call here in Florida, the DCF building, with my bags packed. And that was another part of my experience that I had to chip away of, because every foster home that I was going in, they always said, oh, this is too much for me, or she's too much, I can't handle her, and I was right there. So I heard that as, oh, you're the problem, Felicia. Mm-hmm. So growing up, even though I was seeing, okay, even in this process of me growing up, I was going through therapists, counselors. I can tell you that that experience, I might as well go here because we're talking about this. All my childhood, I was seeing therapists, counselors, psychologists. I was on multiple medications at a very young age, at 7 years old. This is why I hate taking medicine now, because of my childhood. I was on maybe 7 different medications, and I'm not talking about, you know, just the soft medicine. I was on heavy psychosis medicine at a very young age. And it was at the point of where I would go numb in my hands. I would drool. People don't think when I tell them I used to drool. I used to drool because of the treatment. Not on top of that, I was going to an alternative school. An alternative school basically is a school for behavioral or a school for disability or things of that nature. So growing up, not only was I dealing with the the residue or the effects of trauma, I was dealing with the medical part of trauma. I started going through these different places as far as when I began to try to look for love in wrong places. So what does that, when I say look for love in wrong places, that looked like as I was trying to find ways to ease my pain. A lot of times as survivors, we try to find things to make us feel better. So what did I, my first thing, oh, my friends that are around at school, hey, Felicia, and I was probably, 11 years old, and they're like, hey, you ever smoked weed before? No. You want to try? Sure. That's how that looked like. So that ended up, okay, oh, Felicia, you want to sneak out the house? Okay. All right. No, I never did that. Because I was trying to find ways to ease the pain that I was feeling. I already had no love for myself in my experience, and what they said to me was, oh, you're nothing. So I tried to find validation or find ways to ease that pain. I hope that answered your question.
Oh, yes. And it triggers some things. Especially when you said you started asking, you had no experience with some of this behavior, and then you had other children, I'm assuming, of showing you a behavior, but it was because of that void that you had. Am I understanding that correctly? That void of love. Am I understanding that correctly?
Okay, let me repeat the question that I heard from you, and then you can correct me. You're saying that basically I was looking for love from other children, and I found that?
No, not necessarily in other children. You was just looking for love, okay?
Right.
And these children start telling you about these experiences that you never had. But you, like, you know, have you ever tried marijuana, or have you ever tried sneaking out the house. My experience was, do you ditch? So
okay.
that's what I'm saying. So getting you to do these behaviors that was not unknown and you became known of it.
Right.
I said it came from other, it came from other peers of yours, not necessarily
right.
an adult.
Right, no.
Oh, okay.
Curiosity, you know that saying, curiosity killed the cat. I was the curious cat. Like they would say it, or I would see it around my group of peers, and I'm like, all right, we're doing this. So I was a curious one, so yeah. Yes.
Okay, so you started, I don't mean to cut you off, you started with the marijuana. Did it move to more stronger and than that at an early age? Were you introduced?
I was introduced to marijuana, and I was introduced to, I guess what they were called, pills, ecstasy at a very young age. I didn't go further than that because at that time I was still going, I started getting in trouble because of hanging around with the group of peers that I was hanging around with. So my first juvenile experience, detention experience, was about 12 years old with a group of friends. That is crazy. Now that I'm sitting here thinking about it, I was so much of a people pleaser as a child with a group of friends. And one of my friends like, hey, we're going to skip school today. We skipped school. We took the city bus. This is crazy. took the city bus. We went to the mall. And my friend, we're walking around the mall, and she comes to me and is like, oh, Felicia, put this in your pocket. And I'm like, okay, what is it? And so she opens up her jacket or whatever, and I have on my hoodie with pockets in it, and she's like, oh, Felicia, put this in your pocket. And so because I wanted somebody to love me, I wanted somebody to like me, and I wanted, so, okay, and then end up getting caught by the mall police, and that was my first experience. Because I was being a people pleaser.
When you was at home, were you a people pleaser? You know, before you came out into foster care, going back at, you know, if you can have any remembrance of the early age childhood? When did you figure out you were this people pleaser? I mean, I know you learned it when you was older. When it kind of,
yeah,
I'm talking about
a lot
as
older.
A young child. Were you pleasing, trying to be? I know you said you was looking love, but I'm talking about when you was actually in the home before you left the foster care. Did you notice that
was.
About yourself then?
No, I didn't know that what that was. I was like, oh, I just want her to like me, because that's how we. I believe. Okay, I have children, so. I want them to like me. That's what it is. I want to be liked. Everybody wants, okay, I don't think it's a child or adult thing. I think everybody wants to be loved. They want to be seen. They want to be heard. They want to be liked. Mm-hmm. So when that is not a part of your childhood, growing up, you're looking for that, do you see me? Do you hear me? And even into your adulthood, do you see me? Do you hear me? And people pleasing in adulthood looks totally different. Oh, would you take, like, even if you're working, can you take off on my extra hours because I'm going to a party? Sure, I'll take off for you, but you know you really don't want to. So.
Right.
It all stems from that place of I want to be heard. I want you to see me. I want to be loved. I want to be. And everybody, I don't care who you are. If you are a human being, you desire to be valued. you desire to be valued. So that really was what that was in that stage of my life of I want to be loved.
Okay. And I want to ask you about your biological father, because you didn't mention him. Do you have any information about him? Or?
Yes. My father is retired military. Me and my father actually have an amazing relationship. My father actually did not know that I was taken away. My mother never told him. One thing I can say about my father was that even though he was in military full time, he always was there for me. Doesn't matter wherever detention center I was at, whatever foster home I was at, wherever facility I was at, my father was there.
Eventually found out, right, about you. Your mom never told him.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So he found out, and he was always he was just always there. I always had some type of hurt towards him, though, because I was like, when are you going to get me? When are you going to save me? Why not? And so my understanding now that I'm an adult and I've gone through the healing process is that I don't think my father, one, was equipped to handle all the things that I had gone through, and he felt like a failure in some way. That how did his only daughter gone through all this stuff, and he wasn't there? Two, I believe that the military was a big part of who he was, and I don't think he wanted to leave at that time. So now that I'm older, we have a great relationship. He just recently came to visit me in, January, December? And he spent time with his grandkids and my husband. Mm-hmm. So me and my father have an actually good relationship.
Him and your mom, were they ever married?
Yes. When I was born, and then they got divorced when I was two.
Oh, okay. So they were married. Have you ever discussed a divorce or? Because that's traumatic, too, even though you were very young, the parents splitting up. One thing, when did her and your stepfather get together?
Maybe. I really honestly can't answer that. I know I was young.
Did young. You think that was your father?
Yeah. Oh, no.
Okay, that's what I want. That's the point. the question I was trying to get to.
Oh, no.
So did you know you had so you thought your stepfather was your biological father all your life?
No. So I knew
I'm talking about as a young child. I'm sorry, not all your life. I'm talking about when you were younger and growing up.
Okay. Not really. I knew my father because he came around. Like, so while my mom was married, he came around, but I wasn't living with him. I don't know if that makes sense to you.
No, it makes sense. Oh, okay.
And so that was that.
Okay, well, how old was your uncle adult when he started? And you were you the only child? That's the point because he was there other children?
I had two other siblings.
Between your stepfather and your mother, correct?
Yes.
Or was there siblings on the father's side? No, you said you were your father's own child.
Yes.
So there was no other siblings.
Right.
Did he remarry?
Who, my father?
Your father.
Yes, he did.
Have you been married when you was a child to the same woman, or?
I don't know.
You remember.
I know
okay.
he remarried. Okay. I know he remarried.
Okay. Do you have a relationship with her, or is he still married to her, or did you ever have a relationship with her?
Yes. I visit them, last year? Yeah. I had a relationship with her.
Okay, so this is good. I want to go back into the, stay in the childhood a little bit, because you still, we still haven't got to the point where you got married. So I want to still go back, and I guess the other story, part of your story will come along. I don't want to go too much deeper into the adulthood part because we haven't made it there. So you started going.
Sylvia, I'm sorry. It's Penelope. I'm sorry. These are some really great questions. I just wanted to break real quick because we have Annie and other panel members on. I just wanted to make sure that they didn't have any questions for Felicia before we continue on.
Oh,
but
okay.
I love engagement. This is some good conversation. And I think that, you know, so the topics that we're bringing up about trauma and about really bringing that trauma to the surface and you know, breaking, seeing through patterns and learning to address things and going into recovery and knowledge and behaviors to try and cope with what happened to us as we're growing up. These are all great topics and things that we cover. I just want to make sure that the other panel members have a moment to ask a question, and then we'll circle back to you if you're okay with that.
Oh, that's great. Yeah,
so Annie, I just wanted to invite you to join into the conversation and see if you had any questions for Felicia or comments and discussion about some of these topics that have been brought up so far. We're about halfway through the show.
Sure, thank you. looking for love in all the wrong places, boy, was I good at that. I just wanted everyone to love me, and that made me what they used to call promiscuous. Maybe I thought I was a free love advocate or something respectable like that. But, yeah, looking for love. And the idea of being a people pleaser, I have done some really bad things because people told me to. Just people would tell me to, and I would just do it without even thinking because I was told. Without question, instant obedience, right? That comes from being abused as a child. I think obedience was demanded of me. So I wrote down these words in capital letters as you were speaking. I want to be loved. I want to be seen. I want to be heard. I want to be valued. I really liked it. And I had one other thing. Oh, we talked earlier about when did you know that you had been traumatized? When did you realize that this was bad? And I wanted to tell you that I was in my late 40s. And so I've heard people in their 40s and 50s, many people who don't realize until then. I always thought there was something wrong with me. And it wasn't until I started in a recovery program for survivors of incest that I realized that it wasn't me at all. And that's all I have to say. Thank you for letting me share.
And I love that so much. And, you know, I want to just commend you for your strength. If you are over, like, 40, 50, 60 years of wisdom, I'm going to say that, you have, and for you to be aware and to acknowledge that it's not you, but you've gone through some things, trauma and all the other hurtful experience, and you say, look, this is, I'm not going to let this define me anymore, but I'm going to place myself in a recovery program. I'm going to place myself in a space where I can heal from this wound at that lovely years of wisdom. Like, that is so, that's strength for me. That is powerful. It's so strengthening because it takes courage. Like, I'm just going to tell you that, and like, you are so courageous and so powerful, and I loved it. I love every moment of it. Thank you, Anne, for sharing.
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you know, Felicia, as you were, and Annie, as you both were sharing, I was actually reflecting myself. When I first started journal writing, when I first went into therapy and started my recovery, and I, too, I was, as I mentioned, it was 5 years ago, 5.5 years ago, I was the age of 46 when I realized that I was carrying all this maltreatment and the trauma within me. So I was told to journal write, and one of the first things I wrote was the voice of a little girl, you know, started speaking as I was putting the pen to paper, and it said, and I quote, "Perfection will be my protection," because I thought if I was perfect, I might be safe and I might be loved. To your point, right? You try and earn that love. And that really, when you mentioned that, that really resonated with me. And the other thing was, I think it was my first year of therapy, you know, I'd be recalling some of these incidents from my childhood, and I was asked to recall good memories and bad memories. From my therapist saying, you know, sometimes, you know, when a parent treated you, showed you some kindness or love, right? It's like when you're starving and you're thrown a few scraps, it feels like a feast. And I remember, you know, that being said to me and realizing that was true. That was true. If the norm is being verbally, physically, sexually, anything about a little bit above that, any treatment a little bit above that seems like a gift, like nurturing and like love. And so I'm just mentioning this because the other thing, you know, you said is you're almost willing to do anything to get that as a child or as you're growing up, to get that validation, to get that love. And one of the things I found in recovery is that I had to learn how to set boundaries. I think it's very hard to know, especially if you start your recovery in your 40s, how to set boundaries when you know, I didn't even know what boundaries were, especially if you're trying to maintain some sort of relationship with your family members of origin who are still wanting to live in old patterns. So I just wanted to bring that up as well, because it really struck me as also the challenge, at least I've had, with boundary setting and trying to really hold those boundaries in some of these relationships with family members. So I just wanted to share that as well with you.
And Penelope, that was great, because you said something about the boundaries. Like, when you are, I can relate when you said that, because you're like, what is boundaries? I don't know what that is. And then you begin to set them. One of the things that I battled with was that when I set my boundaries, it was like I start cringing on the inside, because I was like, oh, my God, they don't like me. They don't love me. I just set my boundaries. But as I got through that healing process and the recovering process, I realized that my boundaries it was okay for me, one, to set them, and two, that my boundaries was meant for me to keep me at peace, to keep me at a place that I'm not feeling like I'm being used or wounded or hurt. So I love that you share that, because that is something that I believe all survivors of trauma, they suffer with, is setting boundaries for themselves and even asking themselves, do I have a right to set boundaries? Can I even set boundaries for myself? And so I love that you shared that, Penelope. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Felicia. Thank you. So, Sylvia, I wanted to invite you back into the conversation with Felicia.
I'm here.
Felicia.
Oh, yeah, I have more. Because we left off with her at going to the incident for the juvenile. Was a juvenile experience, was that a lot of times? Did you experience that going, you stopping me, Penelope? Or you want me to go on?
Oh, please go on. I don't think that was me. I don't know. I think that might be with some else on
there.
So please go again.
Yeah, Felicia, if that's okay if I call you that or Mrs. Jones, you're going to hear me interchange both times. But I want to ask you, when you was going through those stages before you got married and after you got married, because you was very young when you got married, it's a lot of questions in between that. So I'm going to try to, was it often, were you reoccurring going back to the juvenile facilities, and at this time when these you couldn't be placed because the people couldn't handle you per se? That's what you were saying earlier. Because
mm-hmm.
to me, it don't, like the names that were placed on you growing up, it don't seem like that, but like, especially when you said you was looking for love. And how do you know you was going in the wrong places? It was just something that was happening. But I know at the time it's been changed around. At that time, did you experience a lot of juvenile delinquents? I mean, you know, going into the juvenile?
Yes, because one of the things, you want to ask me something else?
No, go ahead, because this is going to be, I'll be all over the place. So let's stick to one question at a time.
So one of the things that I suffered with during my childhood, like many survivors, is acting out, what they call behaviorally acting out, anger outbursts. Many a times when a child is going through trauma, they're not able to express emotionally, because their wires in the brain are crossed, memory in the body. It's so much, it goes so deep, because when a child gets traumatized, it literally stops the growth of that child. Far as the way they communicate emotions, the way they try to speak about anything, far as emotionally, physically, it's just difficult, because that is what trauma does. It just shocks the brain, really, to that child. So my development emotionally, the way I had respond to anything in my life was the way I responded the first time my trauma happened. The first time my trauma happened, whether I was beat or whether I was being abused sexually, was to get angry. I was angry that no one was protecting me. I was angry that I was always to blame. I was angry that no one heard me or saw me. I was angry. So the time that my abuse was happening, I grew up with that anger. And so even when I was going to people, anything that would set me off, trigger me, or anything that hurt me, anything that didn't feel good emotionally as a child, I would explode. Anger was really my first love, because that was the one, that was that thing, that emotion that I knew that was going to protect me from being hurt, protect me from being used. So I held on to anger because I felt like when I was younger, anger never failed me. And though I carried this anger with me, it became difficult for, like I said, being in foster homes and even at school. So even though I was going to a behavioral school, I was literally flipping chairs and throwing chairs at people and teachers, because why? That's how I handled everything emotionally. There was no one there in my life, only a handful of people that actually tried to sit down and talk to little Felicia, because I'm going to say little Felicia. to keep this distinguished. This is why I go so hard and I'm so passionate about at-risk youth and kids that deal with behavioral problems, because I was one of them. Little Felicia always heard negative things from teachers. Even I know that these people are supposed to be in your life to try to kind of help you, try to mold you. But you have to remember, this is 1990s. And these teachers were not, they didn't have the information or the trauma-informed education for teachers like they do now back then. So teachers just were coming to work. And so I'm a teacher. What do I do with a child that has gone through trauma? How can I handle a child that gone through trauma? I've never seen it. I don't know what it looks like. So when I was dealing with these outbursts, there was a lot of negative comments. Something's really wrong with her. She's crazy. Or that's why her mother left her. And this is why this. And this is why that. So you're hearing this from teachers. I was hearing this from teachers. I was hearing these things from foster parents. I was hearing these things from, oh, my goodness. When I say that I've never heard growing up, I never got praise. I never got any type of encouragement. I never received any of that, only from a handful of people. And that is what caused the anger to kind of just be for that period of time, because of the things I had experienced and what people would say about me. And they didn't know my story. They didn't know what the things I had gone through as a child, but they saw me and they looked at me and say, oh, I washed my hands with her. It's over with. So that resulted in me just going in and out of the detention center.
Thank you so much for sharing that and giving us that information. Now, you still was looking for love, and I'm not going to say in the wrong places. It's just the wrong places happen, okay? That you had no idea that you was going into the wrong places, or did you? I don't think so. I could be wrong, but I believe
it was a mixture.
It was a mixture.
It was a mixture because a lot of times some were letting, and then some was like, I'm going to do it anyway because I don't care. Like, I don't know if any one of you, Penelope, Ann, or Sylvia, if you've ever heard, it's a Lil Wayne song, and it says, I'm going to pick the world up and I'm going to drop it on your head. And so that's a song. It's like a rock anthem type of / hip-hop anthem, and it's probably some years ago. It is what I felt like. I felt like the world was against me, that I'm going to be against the world. And that was like my mindset through childhood and in my teenage years, was the world does not love me. The world hates me. And I believe that the world hates me because my teachers say that I'm nothing, that I would never amount to anything. My caseworker says I'm too much for them to handle. My foster parents say that I have real problems. And if I don't, I will die before I'm 18. This is what I heard almost every single day of my childhood. And I laugh because if I would have listened to them, I laugh because if I would have listened to everyone that said any negative thing about me, I would not be here speaking with you today. I would not be here today if I believed everything that they had placed over my life, everything that has happened to me, mistakes, failures, everything that tried to break me, tried to destroy me, I would not be here talking to all of you wonderful people tonight.
Thank you so much. Penelope?
Yes,
I'm kind of emotional
so
right now from Felicia's story. I'm going to get myself together. Thank you, Felicia,
absolutely,
for sharing so much about the earlier part of your life.
Thank you, Sylvia.
So, Annie, I wanted to invite you to join in the conversation again and didn't know if you had any questions or comments regarding what's been shared by Felicia or asked by Sylvia.
Sure. I have a few comments. One is that she said she grew up in anger and that anger was her first love. I like that. That it protected her from being abused. And I have a lot of anger in me. I haven't really tried to release it because I'm the kind of person that takes a lot of abuse before I say anything. And so anger is hard for me to come up with. And it's good for me because anger is reminding me that it wasn't my fault. So I know we're supposed to get over anger, but I'm not, and I don't know that I ever will. I wanted your ideas about that, please, Felicia.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, and I love that because it's so true. We believe that anger is bad. Anger is a sin. You don't get angry. You don't show anger. It's not that the anger is bad. It's how you handle anger when you're angry. Because I didn't know how to be angry and manage my anger, it resulted in outbursts. And that's many a times what happens. There's different forms of anger and different types of anger. And so mine was the most, I believe, the dangerous kind because it was explosive. But there's different anger, types of anger where you are angry at yourself. Are you angry but you don't share that you're angry? Or you get angry but your anger is more like it's like a ticket. So every time something or someone makes you angry, like you're punching a hole, you're taking a hole puncher and you punching the ticket until something major happens and basically you just blow up. So when you say that anger protects you, anger is emotion. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to protect you. It's okay to say, I'm angry about this. You have a right to be angry. But realize it's not about being angry or feeling angry. It's about how you manage it, that you don't be angry with yourself and begin beating up on yourself or downing yourself, but you're using your anger to say, hey, this is my justified right to be angry because this is how I feel. And the root emotion for anger is hurt. It's hurt. It's being wounded. So I love that you said that, Annie. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, and thank you, Annie. And Felicia for bringing it up because I think, you know, anger, it's one of those topics that I think is, I don't know if I call it a hot topic, but it's one of those topics that's multidimensional. Maybe that's the way to classify it almost. I know when we bring up forgiveness, I feel like that's also a multidimensional topic and a lot of different thoughts on just the concept of forgiveness when it comes to the perpetrators in who are in our lives. But in terms of anger, I think for me, that just brings up, I feel like it's always a mixed bag, and I think it's something that I've learned that I just have to take it one episode at a time and be discerning about it. And a lot of to be able to be discerning is also to be able to regulate the brain, right? And I think Lucy also mentioned about the child's brain that's traumatized and how it's the impact of the trauma on the child's brain. And how it's stifled basically at that time and the development, you know, of one's brain if the trauma isn't addressed. Even, you know, we chronologically become older, but our brains don't necessarily follow us in that direction. But getting back to anger, I guess what I could say is for me, it is regulating the brain. It is discernment to say, you know, if I feel myself getting angry, what am I getting angry about, you know, and how do I manage this anger? And some of it is fear of getting angry because I don't want to become. And when my abusers became angry, that's when the abuse really, really was volatile. I, you know, sometimes I approach anger with trepidation and fear, and I have to, and it's that. It's almost a traumatic. It's a trigger almost. It's trauma. It's traumatic for me to be certain, realize when I'm angry in a certain way. But sometimes I feel like anger is good if you means that you need to fight for yourself, right? That you realize that there's maltreatment and it's not okay, right? That you've actually made enough progress in your recovery. You're making this progress to realize that you should be angry about being mistreated, and then it's not okay, and it's an opportunity to address it. So I guess in terms of just the topic of anger being brought up, it's really about analyzing the moment and being discerning about what it means and what to do about it. So I just wanted to throw that out back at you and see what your thoughts were.
I actually love that, Penelope, because I believe what you said about just being angry and realizing that it's good and you didn't want to be angry because that's when the abuser did the most abusing when they're angry. I think it's so key and so needed to be angry, especially you have a right to be angry. Like, I guess, let me know if this makes sense, because this is like my thought process. Like, you have a right to be pissed the heck off with what happened to you. But catch this. Don't let it consume you. Because when you get angry at what has happened to you, that's justified anger. Because what happened to you, you did not deserve it. And it is a way for you to stand up for yourself. So I love what you said, that Penelope. It is a way in a form of you standing up for yourself and saying that wasn't right. It wasn't right. It's just not allowing that anger to consume you to where you begin to shame yourself or guilt yourself or self-harm yourself or anything of like that, but being justified in your anger and saying, what happened to me? I did not deserve it. And how dare them feel like they could do that to me? So I believe that anger is a great feeling, emotion, when you're able to manage it. And that's the whole process in itself, along with the healing journey, because a lot of times when you're dealing with emotional, just communicating emotionally, we all have different ways how we express our emotions. So that's a whole process in itself, dealing with the emotional wounds and how do we manage that. And so the first thing I would say with managing like anger, hurt, shame, guilt, these emotional wounds is really, one, allowing yourself to mourn and be angry and feel what you feel. And in this process of you feeling what you feel and mourning those emotions, make sure that you are in a safe place. Make sure you have a support system and you're not alone, because that process in itself, it hurts, because you're now acknowledging of the emotion part of it, and it can be a process. So I never suggest that anybody mourn their emotions from what they've gone through alone. Please. Reach out.
Yeah, that's really great advice, because that grief can be overwhelming. Absolutely. So, Sylvia, I just wanted to, we have 20 minutes left in the show, so the show is just really zooming by, and I didn't know if you had any more questions or comments for Felicia as we begin our slow descend and into the ending of the show.
Yes, I really have, but I'm going to try to keep it short. I really appreciate you, Felicia. for telling your story here. How I can see the similarities, but the difference of the trauma that we face. See the similarities to the extent of, you know, what happened to me growing up in life, and what happened to you. But what if you don't have? Because that's what I had to face until I, you know, found NASCA. But truly, what if you don't? What if you have to face this alone? And you can't reach out, or when you're reaching out, you're still not being heard. And more trauma is coming while you're trying to reach out, while you're trying to get some assistance. What happens with that? Because I learned well how to suppress my anger, okay? And now it's affecting me physically because up until this age now, I don't know what to say with that because, and I haven't really reached out to NASCA yet with some things because I'm so used to dealing with it alone. What would you have to say about that?
I want to encourage you that you're never alone. And you said that you haven't reached out to NASCA. That is the first thing that you should do because there are people in NASCA, I know for a fact, that they will hear you, they will encourage you and support you, and that you're never alone. The second thing is you can reach out to me as well as you can reach out to, there's so many resources, and I believe NASCA is a great place as far as resources. They have amazing resources. Begin to look at those resources, whether it's, I'm going to say it, YouTube University. There's so many, because we live in this age of information now, we have so many people that in the trauma-informed field. And you can start there, especially if you don't have everyday support. But you can begin to find resources and people that can support you while you're going through the process that you're in at this moment. So never, I want to first encourage you that never feel that you're alone because there's so many people that have gone through trauma that has been where you are, and they might not been through what you've been through exactly, but they can understand and relate because they've also gone through trauma. And so I don't know if you were on last time that we were on, I always said that something about a trauma survivor, when trauma survivors get together, it's just like a movement of strength. It's embodying, it's encouraging, it's powerful because the strength that's when you're speaking to them and the things that they suffered and things that they overcame, and then you hear their story and you're like, oh, I love this person because they didn't break when everything in their life was trying to break them, and they're here. And so I just want to encourage you, Sylvia, that you're able to, and you're deserving of whatever you're seeking for right now in your life. So I hope that helped.
Absolutely. And I'm just saying, I'm just now beginning with NASCA. I only learned about them I've been involved for about a month. So I think that's why I haven't reached out. But I got some issues I got to deal with, Felicia. So we'll see what's going on because I really have a trust factor that is in me that I don't know. But thank you. And I'll probably do more reaching out to see. I don't know. But thank you for sharing. I'll hopefully I could get better at that.
You're welcome, Sylvia.
Yes.
you know, and thank you, Felicia, because that's absolutely correct. And, I mean, I love everything that Felicia said, because NASA is built on the platform where, you know, we are, you know, a family, because as Felicia said, when two survivors get together, it's just a very powerful and empowering experience. And, you know, in NASA, you being heard, and we all have totally different stories, but a lot of the times, you know, our feelings are very similar, and you have a group of people who can relate and understand to a lot of the things that you've experienced. And if you go on the front page of the NASCA website, which is www.nasca, which is NASCA.org, there's actually a contact list of NASCA family members who have signed up to receive calls. Their phone numbers are listed. They receive calls from other NASCA family members, from other people that want to talk about their experiences, and that's why our phone numbers are on there. So you can find a lot of different adult survivors of child abuse that are longtime NASCA members that are willing to and want to listen, and their phone numbers are right there. So, you know, when you're ready, Sylvia, I would just strongly encourage you to take a look at that list. And there are people there that will, that are there to really hear you and support you. And that's what NASCA is all about, which is why I love NASCA so much. And a lot of what Felicia says just really embodies, everything Felicia says embodies what really what NASCA's mission is and what NASCA stands for. So it's members for a very, very, very long time. And you are not alone. That's one thing I love about NASCA. You are never, ever alone. Because being an adult survivor of child abuse can be a lonely business. So with that being said, we've got about 12 more minutes left, and Annie, I just wanted to invite you back into the conversation with Alicia. I'm sorry, with Alicia.
Sure, thank you. I wanted to make a comment about going through this alone. I think we all start off that way when we first realize what's happened to us. We keep it silent for a while. I want to say that hanging out in person, face-to-face with other survivors and hearing their stories and telling them my story, that was probably the best healing modality that I did. And so I totally recommend any kind of support meetings with other survivors. And we're certainly not alone, because so many people have been through this. So many people have been abused as children. We have a lot of fellows out there.
Yeah, thank you, Annie. That's a great, you know, testimony to your experience of healing and what it's helped you. And I love what you said, and I agree with that as well. And Felicia, I didn't know if you had any other comments along those lines.
No, I was just saying absolutely. I love what she said. She said, when we start this journey, we do start alone, but, you know, we're never alone, especially not by ourselves. So that's what I loved about that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you. So for those of you listening in as well, I would say if you're new to NASCA, if you're listening in, if you are, you know, it doesn't really matter. You're just, you know, beginning your road to recovery, or you've been in recovery for years. I mean, we're all in recovery, and there's no hierarchy at NASCA. You know, what does it matter if this is day one or if you're even contemplating it? There's no judgment here, but all are welcome. And I would recommend everybody go on the NASCA website, which is www.nasca, which is NASCA.org. There's a lot of information on the website. In fact, the website has been built for it's we are a worldwide organization. So there are support groups in every corner in Dickson County of our world, and we actually have a map of locations of different support groups. They're geographic, so by continent and by country. And then if you're within, you know, North America, United States, there are within state, within city. So there's a lot of information, even just about how to find a recovery group, or start a recovery group if you wish to start one, no matter where you are on this planet. There's also information about a lot of our other services for adult survivors, which was mentioned in the mission statement. Our show, which is Stop Child Abuse Now, it's on 5 nights a week, Monday through Friday, on every single night of the week, from 8 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays are special guest nights, which is anyone who wishes to tell their story time or they told it before is welcome to come on as a special guest. Those are arranged well beforehand, but there's information on how to appear as a special guest on the NASC website on that front page, as well as the show schedule. And on Tuesdays and Thursdays, just like tonight, we have survival professional nights where it's an open mic forum, and you can call in, and we have a survivor professional, just like Felicia Johnson, who can come in and lend their expertise, and we discuss issues that are related to child abuse, trauma prevention, and intervention recovery. We also have actually a group recovery Zoom meeting. So if you're looking to start with one facilitated through NASCA, that is available. They are on Zoom. That is also on the front page of the NASCA website. Those are 3 days a week, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. They are Zoom. But if you wish to remain anonymous and have your camera off, that is also an option for you. They're very well facilitated. I have participated in them, and I found them very, very helpful. So those are just some of the offerings that NASCA has in terms of its services for adult survivors. There's a lot of information on recovery and different modalities. We don't recommend one or the other, just information for you to read upon what each one is. And also, as I mentioned, there are there's a volunteer list. We have NASCA family members who are available and happy to answer phone calls. And are available anytime anyone needs to talk. So that is also something that's provided by NASCA. So just a few of the many, many things on our NASCA webpage that you may wish to peruse. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that NASCA is a nonprofit. It's a 501c3, you know, fully nonprofit organization. We are funded through our membership, through our family membership. So we do accept contributions via PayPal. That's also located on the front page of our website. And no, you know, donation is too small, even a few dollars. It helps. But we are fully self-sustaining through our members and through those types of donations. So that is a couple things I wanted to mention about the NASCA website in terms of resources. And we'll put more information about what NASCA is all about. With 5 minutes left, Felicia, I just wanted to just give you a few minutes to wrap us up this evening. And I also wish to thank you for being on with us.
Thank you, Penelope. I always enjoy being on NASCA with both you, Penelope, and Anna, Annie. So one thing that I just want to say, just to sum up, if you didn't get anything out of tonight's call, I really wanted to say that every emotion that you have is valid. Allow yourself to be happy, feel sad, be angry, feel hurt, because this is your story, this is your life, and you are deserving to heal it. You are deserving to find value. You are deserving to change the trajectory of life, perspective of your life. You're deserving of it. Never feel that you are alone, that you're in your struggle. You can overcome fears or anything that have tried to destroy you. You are deserving. And so I just really want to encourage you that you have the power to really walk in your healing and be amongst amazing other trauma survivors that's doing the same thing. They're doing the work just like you, and that's the beauty of it. So I'm Felicia Johnson. I'm always a pleasure to be with all of you, as well as you can find me on Instagram or any other social media platform, because I believe I'm everywhere. I'm a business owner of the Heal Your Story LLC, and I look forward to, if you want to reach out, you can. So I thank you again. Thank you, Naska, and thank you, Sylvia, Penelope, and Anna, for just allowing me to be here today.
Oh, thank you so much, Felicia. It's always a pleasure and a privilege to have you and call you our Naska sister and have you as our survivor professional on the shows. And I always, like Andy said, I'm always thinking that's learning so much from you. So I really, really appreciate you. I'm very honored to always, you know, be in your presence. So I wish to thank you. For those of you listening, I want to let you know regarding the show schedule this week, we have a very robust full show schedule. So tomorrow night, which is Wednesday, April 13th, 2022, special guest night, we had Katie Slattery from Upstate New York. She's a survivor activist and a volunteer as a special guest. On Thursday, we have our survivor professional, Barbara Joy Hansen from Massachusetts. She's a survivor activist and author, longtime family member. And on Friday, we have our special guest tonight. We have Fire Brown Gladshins, Georgia. He's the founder of ASCA Atlanta. He's a survivor. So very, very robust show scheduled this week. Please tune in Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday to be on the panel and support all of our guests. Again, the show airs every night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and the number to call in to participate is area code 646-595-2118 to call in and be a member of the panel. These shows are all archived, meaning that they are also recorded, and we put them in archives, which also can be found on the NASC website. So anytime, go back and listen to this show. We have a lot of our members throughout the world listen to these shows that are archived. It helps them as a healing modality as well, just to listen and to learn. So that's another offering that NASCA serves its membership. I wish to thank, again, Felicia Johnson from Miami, Florida, for being with us this evening. I want to thank my co-host and NASCA family member, Annie Martha, for this evening. I wish to thank Sylvia for being on the panel this evening and asking some really fantastic questions to help facilitate our discussion and really help to inform everyone, not only Annie and myself, but those who are going to be streaming in and listening into the archives on the show. It was very, very helpful to get your questions and your insights. So I wish to thank you as well. And as I wrap up the show, as I always say, there are enough adult eyes on this planet to keep every child safe. So if you see something, please say something. If you see something, it is our moral responsibility to protect our children. So I wish to thank you and wish you all a very, very, very thank you so much.
You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.